French, and I'm the executive pastor here at Redeemed. One of the things that you'll come to know about Rick, if you haven't already figured that out, is that he often does his own thing. As part of my job as executive pastor is to try to keep him on task. That said, it doesn't always work. When the teaching team met a couple weeks ago, we had decided, as we were trying to figure out how we were going to wrap up this series, the Sermon on the Mount, we decided that he was going to preach on the first six verses of Matthew chapter 7, and I was going to preach the next six from verses 7 through 12. Well, if you were here last week, you probably noticed that he went ahead and talked about that too. So I had a decision to make. I could either continue going in chapter 7, I could stick with the passage that I had already started working on, or I could do something completely different. So after some time in prayer, another meeting with the teaching team, conversations with Rick, copious amounts of caffeine in the last few days, the answer became pretty clear. We're doing yes. As I was working on the sermon this week, and up until about 4 p.m. yesterday, I had a plan. I knew what I was going to say, mostly how I was going to say it. I just needed to figure out some of the transitions. And then I decided to re-listen to Rick's sermon from last week, because there was a couple things that he had mentioned that I wanted to make sure I included. And by the way, that link, that page should be in the weekly update this week. So after listening to Rick's sermon, God went, nope, we're going to do this a little differently. So, as we've been working through the Sermon on the Mount, the biggest thing that we've learned is that Jesus was trying to help his disciples and the people listening to realign our hearts to God's. They had all the tools that they needed. They just need to be recalibrated a little bit. So first, we're going to do a super fast summary of where we've been. The first four chapters of Matthew give us the story of Jesus' birth, his baptism, to being tempted in the desert, the calling of his disciples. But this Sermon on the Mount, this section that we've been talking about, was the first real public teaching that we see from Jesus. And he starts it off with explaining to those that were listening what it means to be blessed, continued talking about being the salt and the light. And then because he knew there were people in the crowd who were confused by what he was saying, because it seemed like he was throwing out all the laws that they were following, he told them that he was actually there to fulfill the law and the prophets, but he was there to explain what the original intent and the heart behind it. Which brought us to the you've heard it said statements. It was helping his disciples understand that it was not enough to just follow the law, but that their hearts needed to be aligned with God. That just doing good things isn't enough. After all, even the Gentiles did those. Explained that what they were already doing in their daily prayers was exactly what they should be doing as long as they had the correct understanding of why the words mattered. Reminding them that they needed to be approaching the world with their good eye and not the bad eye. That the goal was to be looking beyond themselves, caring for others, loving people well, forgiving those that harm them so that they can be forgiven when they do the same. Jesus told his disciples not to worry about tomorrow, that God's got us, and all we have to do is seek after his righteousness and his kingdom, and the rest will be taken care of. Which brings us to what we talked about last week, and how we need to work on our own stuff before we can help others work on theirs. And how if we're truly seeking after God and our hearts are aligned with his, we will be asking God for the things we need to continue to love him and love others well, to be able to look at the world with our good eye. Rick ended his sermon with the question, how's your vision? Asking if you have things that are blocking your good eye, if we're more focused on protecting ourselves and therefore robbing others of relationship with Christ and ourselves of the joy and the peace that comes with that relationship. And that was the question that smacked me in the middle of the afternoon yesterday. Because you see, I had a plan. And after I realized Sunday that I was going to have to pivot, God had already given me an idea on where he wanted me to go. I was going to go more in the storytelling realm of things. Is this working? Alex, can you hit the next?
Yeah.
Okay. 1 second. So Rick had talked last week about these different lanes of message styles of teaching and preaching and storytelling. And while normally we're going to be more in that teaching lane, this week we're going to be in that storytelling. All right, see? So this week more storytelling. All right, you can go to the next. Yep. So I was going to talk to you this morning about different scenarios that people face, mistakes that are made, life circumstances that occur, things that we're going to encounter as we engage in the Mattawan community, with the idea that you could connect to one or more of these stories to your own life and give you the opportunity to think about your own story and how knowing your story will help you be ready to help others. I was going to give you the stories broken out with different names attached to them. They're all real stories, but I was planning to provide some anonymity to it to protect those involved. But yesterday afternoon, I was still struggling with how to make it all flow. And Rick texted me in the middle of the afternoon asking how sermon prep was going. And I was honest with him and told him that I was having a hard time and my brain was needing to focus. And so he suggested that I go for a walk. I was like, yeah, okay, fine, maybe. But you see, I live in a farm and we have not a lot of great walking space. It's a fairly small circle that is actually walkable. So unless I wanted to trek through the bumpy, super freshly harvested fields, wasn't really appealing to me. So I decided instead I was gonna sit in front of my computer for a little longer and continue to struggle through. After about an hour of that, I went fine. Threw on some shoes, grabbed a jacket, and just went outside to start walking around the barns. And as I walked, I started to talk out loud, working through the stories, trying to figure out how much detail I was gonna give and how to tie everything together. And that's when God interrupted. So, this morning, I'm gonna tell you my story. I'm the oldest of four. I have one younger sibling, two younger brothers. I grew up in the church. My parents were very heavily involved, from small group leaders to later on my dad planting a church, becoming a pastor and all of that. So I grew up, we were there every Sunday, pretty much every time it met. As a teenager, I served in the nurseries. I served on the tech team, what is now called slides. It used to be transparencies. So some of the older crowd might know what that is. very involved in my youth group. Went to pretty much every week. Another important note is I was homeschooled, so I was kind of a weirdo that way too. But all the way through, like very, very involved in everything. I met my husband, John, in eighth grade in a homeschool co-op class, and we became friends, and starting around 16, we decided to start dating. Around that time, we also decided that we were gonna go to each other's youth groups. So his met on Wednesday nights, mine met on Sunday nights. It was great, we could go to both, we could hang out more, see each other, because both being homeschooled, you know, we didn't have that school opportunity to be able to see each other every day. So we found every possible way to be able to hang out in person. One winter, my youth group was planning a winter retreat. We're gonna go to Boyne Mountain. One of our church members had a little house, cabin, cottage thing up there that they were gonna let the youth group use. And then during the day, we were gonna snowboard or ski, whatever our preferred method of going down the slopes was. And then nights were gonna be the typical youth retreaty type stuff. So signed up, obviously. John signed up because he loved to snowboard. It's gonna be a great time. After he signed up, my youth pastor asked to sit down and meet with us. And it was like, okay, that's a little weird, but I thought, okay, maybe they want to go over some ground rules because we were the only dating couple in my youth group. We were a fairly smaller group, so this was the first time that we'd done a away trip with them. And that wasn't inaccurate. That meeting, they did want to go over the rules in which they wanted us to function within for this youth retreat. They sat us down, and my youth pastor looked at us and said, I know what you're doing, and I don't want this to be a romantic weekend getaway from you, for you guys. So John, you're not allowed to go. Instantly, I was angry. How dare somebody tell me what they think I'm doing, what they assume I'm doing. And then that started a spark in me of questioning, what is this thing that I'm a part of? Why am I a part of this church? And I couldn't name it at that time, but it started something. Time passes, John and I are still dating. We made the very mature decisions as 17-year-olds to go, if they think we're doing what they think we're doing, why not just go ahead and do the thing that we think we're doing? So we graduate high school. I start going to KVCC. He gets a full-time job. And then one November, after a few days of really not feeling well, I took a pregnancy test. Not wanting to believe what I saw, I took another one. Still going, okay, not 100% sure I believe this. Made a doctor's appointment where the doctor came in and confirmed, yes, you are pregnant. And I still remember, it's been almost exactly 20 years, I still remember the first question that she asked me after she gave me the news. She asked me if I had support if I kept the baby. She didn't ask me if I wanted to keep it. She asked me if I had support. And I had to stop and really think. Because you see, at this point, John and I, we've been dating for 2.5 years. We were talking about marriage, but we hadn't really come to a conclusion. We were kind of thinking we were going to wait till I was done with school. But a baby changes everything. And I didn't know for sure what he was going to say. I was still living at home because going to KVCC, there's not dorm options, and I couldn't really afford an apartment on my own. And I didn't know for sure what my parents were going to say, how they were going to support. And that, again, fed that question of what am I a part of? Because you see, I had been going to church this whole time. At that time, I had changed churches to go into the church that John was part of because my church was in the middle of a church split. So I was already wrestling with some stuff. And then having to face that question of what are the people around you, how are they going to respond to this news, started feeding that a little more. Told John that I was pregnant, confirmed, he kind of knew that was a possibility, but confirmed that I was. And he said, okay. He probably said other things. He may not have. I don't remember. But he said, okay. And he started the process of figuring out where we were going to live, getting some of those other things into control, you know, figured out. I told my parents, and my dad was like, he was sad for me that my life was not the plan that I had originally had. But he was there to support me and my mom as well and whatever we needed. We made plans to get married before the end of the year. Some of that was selfish because John had better health insurance than my dad, so it was going to be better cost for me. my dad wanted me to wait because I think he wasn't ready for me to leave the house yet. So we started that process. Asked my dad to marry us, and he said, yes, absolutely. I just have to go ask my pastor, because you see, at this time, he wasn't ordained yet, so he had to get permission from his lead pastor. But because of what was going on in that church, that pastor said, no, you cannot marry your daughter because she got pregnant. Again, for me, that's kept feeding that flame of, I don't know why I'm doing this thing called church. I don't know why I'm part of it. So we pivoted, we asked the pastor of the church that John is part of that I had just started attending and asked him if he would marry us. And he said, after some uncomfortable silence, said, yeah, I can do that. And we asked if we could use that church to get married in. And we were told, I need to check with the deacons to see if they'll allow it. So we had to wait about a week to 10 days to figure out what was going to happen. And again, that continued to feed that question of why am I a part of this thing called church? Eventually, we did get permission. We were married in that church. We had to change the date a little bit because the original date we wanted was on a day that the church was in use. But we got married. And the other thing I didn't know is because I was in this new church, new to me church that I'd kind of been involved with youth group and stuff and kind of a little bit as a young adult, but hadn't really made a whole lot of connections there yet. And I didn't know how they were going to respond to me. Some people in that church were absolutely incredible. They came around us and surrounded us and made sure we had what we needed to furnish an apartment, to get what we needed for the baby. Some of the women threw a baby shower and all of these things, and it was incredible and wonderful. Some people in that church, I have not acknowledged my presence to this day. one of the women in that church that was on the more helpful side. They helped with childcare, and it was incredible because being 19 or 20 years old and having a baby and going to college and your husband's working full time, childcare can be a little difficult, and she helped with that, which is awesome. But in the midst of trying to be encouraging, she said to me something that, again, I still remember very clearly of, because you married the father of your child and you kept that child, your story is not going to be, your testimony is not going to be as strong. And so I kept that and I internalized that. And I think she meant it in a way of, I did the right thing of keeping the baby and marrying that. Like, I think she meant it really, really encouraging. But that's not how my heart took it at that time, because I was still trying to figure out what this thing called church was. Those early years of marriage, as we were kind of figuring out what we were doing, figuring out what do we even want to do, we still attended the church mostly regularly, but not entirely. Because it was important for us that while we weren't 100% sure, we wanted our kids to be raised in an environment that was with people of similar values and morals and all of that. And so we stayed for a while. We added our youngest child, our second child, to the mix. And we came to a realization that, yes, church was important to us, and yes, we wanted to be a part of this. But this wasn't the right place, because there weren't enough families for our kids to grow up around. So we decided to take that and start that process of looking for a new church. So we visited a few different ones. We had kind of narrowed it down to three or four different churches that we were going to go visit again and look at a little more closely. And in the middle of that, John got sick. Couldn't figure out what was going on. He was in and out of the doctor. Testing was coming back completely inconclusive. He was gotten to a point where he wasn't able to work a full week's worth of work. So he had burned through all of his sick time, all of his vacation time. And it was getting a little tight for us. And in the middle of all of that season, we got a knock on the door one evening. We opened the door, and it's the pastor of the church that we were considering leaving. And we invited him in, and he sat down and he said, I just wanted to come check in on you guys because I haven't seen you in a couple weeks. Now, mind you, at this point, it had been almost 2 months since we had been in that building. And so we told him that John's been sick, and so getting out, you know, it's been a lot for him to do that. He's prayed for us and cared for us nicely in that way, but then we also told him, but actually we were considering leaving. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Is there anything I can do to convince you to stay? And Tom's like, well, one of the things that's important to us is that our kids are raised around other kids and other young families, and there just isn't that environment in your church. And he goes, oh, well, good luck. And that was about it. You see, in the midst of this time, like anybody that we had really been connected with at that church had left for similar reasons. And that dismissal, again, for me, while I was still wrestling with this idea of what church is, reinforced this, okay, maybe church isn't the right thing for me. I still believed in God, still believed in Jesus with all of my heart, but I wasn't convinced that church was this thing. And so we left. We found another church, we started getting plugged in and engaged, and we started building that community. This new church had a lot of young families, kids that my kids could grow up with and around, parents and other, you know, adults that we could start getting connected with, and so we started getting plugged in. See, one of the things that John and I had figured out over the course of these few years was that, yes, church was important, and so because of that, we are going to be involved and invested in the life of the church. We weren't just going to show up on Sunday mornings. We were going to be serving in different roles. We were going to be invested in small groups and in what the church is doing and events and all those things. So we dove in, and we became members right away, confused quite a few people with all of that. And we started to build a community that came around us and supported us, and it was exactly what I was looking for. And it was one of the best things ever, because at that time, we didn't know what was about to happen. About a year and a half into attending this new church, they were doing a VBS that week. And I think it was the second night of that VBS. John had a rare day off, and so we were just hanging out in our house in the afternoon when he got a phone call from his mom. "John, something's happened. You need to get home now. We've called the ambulance. I don't know if your dad's going to make it." See, his dad had Parkinson's, and it was fairly well managed, as well managed as one with Parkinson's can be managed. And he had been out that day doing something in the fields. So I'm not sure exactly what he was doing. And his meds had started wearing off. And when his meds wear off, tremors started getting more violent as in that in between. And on his way into the house, he tripped and fell and hit his head, and which triggered a heart attack that he could not come back from. That day, as we were trying to wrap our heads around what even happened, I don't know who I called at that church, but I called somebody, or somebody was called, because they came and they picked up Blake and took him to VBS. They took him to VBS all the rest of that week. I didn't have to worry about any of that. They helped figure out care for Caden because he was too young at that point for that. And they just came around and surrounded us and supported us through those couple of weeks and that initial aftermath that happens. And then things calmed down. We kind of settled back into a rhythm and a routine. And over the course of the next 2 or 3 years, everybody that we had been connected with left for various reasons, most of them good reasons. You know, they had new ministry opportunities, they had jobs out of state, they had other things happening in their lives. And so again, started feeling disconnected. And I had never really truly answered that question of what is this thing called church that I'm a part of, because things had gotten good, so I kind of left that to the side. But as my community left me, all of those feelings and all those thoughts started coming back in and going, I don't know why I'm here, what's the purpose, what am I supposed to do here? A few years into that, we had a new pastor. We went through a series every year of Word of the Year. And one year, my word was relationship. And I thought, I was like, well, that's a weird word. So then I thought, okay, I'm pretty sure I know what this means. Like, I'm struggling with this thing called church, so God wants me to work on my relationship with him. And that was part of it. But really what he was doing is he was starting to build the relationships that I needed around me. He started to bring people into my life that I was going to need and that they would need me. He started to build into the relationships of the people that I was already connected with and develop that deeper and more intentional. And so, you know, John and I were more intentional about the things we were doing, but also God was bringing people into our lives that we were going to need. And I'm so glad that I had stayed, because it was this close to leaving Lighthouse. And in that moment that God brought other people in. Because then one November day, I got that phone call. I got the phone call and said, "Nicole, your dad has stopped breathing." See, at this point, my dad had been diagnosed with ALS. If you're not familiar with what ALS is, it's also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, but it's a horrific disease. It's one where your muscles atrophy, your nerve endings stop. You slowly start to lose everything that you can do physically. You start to lose your ability to walk, to move your hands, to move your arms, to speak, to see, to breathe. And my dad had some really, really good years with that. He was one of long diagnosis. He was diagnosed for almost 8 years, and 6.5 of those years were pretty good. But in the months leading up to his death, like, I knew that was coming, but it doesn't prepare you for the day that you get that phone call. And the people that God had put around me in that moment were exactly the people that I needed, that dropped everything for me, were there to support me in whatever way we needed, came to a visitation and funeral where they didn't know anybody else, just to be there for me. And again, the church community that I was in surrounded me and loved me and cared for me and did what they needed for me. Which is good, because 2 weeks later we got the phone call that John's grandpa had passed. So we got to do another round of funeral and visitation. And then 2 weeks later I got the phone call that my grandmother had passed. That December sucked. It was not good. But through all of that, God had started to heal me. And I realized at that point and somewhere in that season that God had changed the question for me. It was no longer, what am I doing in this church? What is this church thing doing for me? It became, what am I supposed to do with God's people? See, the church wasn't about me. It's about God and my connection to God through serving with other people. About a year after my dad passed, I finally answered a formal call to ministry. See, God had been calling me my entire life. I just ignored it. I remember being 8, 9, 10 years old, and my church didn't do a VBS that summer. I don't know why, because I was a kid. But I remember being pissed off and angry about it. So I went to my parents and said, we're going to do a VBS in our backyard. And I'm going to plan the lessons, and I'm going to plan the crafts, and I'm going to get the snacks. Mom, I just need you to take me to the store and to buy me all the things. And she did. So I have no idea what my parents thought. They don't remember this happening. But we held a VBS in my backyard. We invited kids because it was important for me at that age to know, like, for my friends to know that Jesus loved them. And so I've known from the time I was little that God was calling me to something. But in the midst of all of that, I let other people have input into that. When I was 17 and the youth pastor said that, you know, made comments that started those questions, I let that impact. When that woman who so thoughtfully and, you know, heartfelt tried to encourage me, I had taken that and internalized it and said, look, my story's not good enough because I did the right thing. So who am I to be able to lead other people to Jesus? And so I had let all of those things and all those people kind of influence me. But in the more recent years, the community that God had built around me was able to pour into me and change that question and help me see that God had a calling and a purpose for my life. And I just had to step into it and surrender that to God. See, I gotten so wrapped up this week, and I still fail sometimes, gotten so wrapped up this week in what I thought the best way to do this message was that I forgot to listen to God again. I knew that he was telling me that I was supposed to tell my story, but over the course of this past week, I had decided to change it just a little. Sanitize it for you guys, give it to you in smaller doses so you can connect each of the stories. And I don't think that would have been a bad thing. I think God absolutely could have used that in an approach in an incredible way. But the thing that I was missing was that I still had stuff to deal with in the middle of those stories. So yesterday afternoon, as I paced in the cold, and God smacked me in that face with the question of how's your vision? What's in the way of you seeing with your good eye? I had to surrender more things to God. He revealed to me more things that I had and have to work through to deal with my own plank so that I can be ready to engage the Mattawan community, to be able to walk alongside those that are struggling with their own specs, not to judge them, but to help them, and to be able to truly point them towards the hope that can only be found in Jesus. My story, your story matters. Because it's not just your story, it's God's story. It's his story of redemption and love and hope and joy. Our stories not only deserve to be told just as they are, but we owe it to ourselves to tell them. And the people we come in contact to share them. Because when we hold on to our stories, not letting others know how broken we are, we deny God the opportunity to show others how much he loves them. And worse, we deny God the opportunity to show us how much he loves us. Sometimes the planks that we have to deal with aren't all that obvious. It's not some specific sin or struggle that you're working through. Sometimes those planks are thinking we're not worthy enough of God's love. We don't believe God has actually forgiven us. We don't believe God has actually equipped us. We allow what others think or might think to come between us and our ability to see with our good eye. Now, not everybody is called to share their story in a public way like I just did, but you are supposed to share your story with others. And I don't know what that looks like for you, but God does. And he will absolutely let you know when and how it's time to tell it. You just have to be listening to him. Next week is our first public service in Mattawan. And the last couple months here in Rick's basement has been great. It's small, it's close, it's loud, there are kids everywhere, it's awesome. It's also been an intentional time of going through this Sermon on the Mount to help us prepare our hearts, getting to a place where we are seeking God's kingdom, digging into our Bibles, spending time in prayer, and generally getting ready to live out that calling that God has placed on Redeemed, to be intensely focused on loving the Mattawan community, and doing that by loving God with all of our hearts, souls, and minds. But before we can do that, we have to be truly seeking after God, aligning our hearts with his, dealing with our planks, whatever those are. So that way, when stuff that life throws at us and the people that we're getting ready to walk alongside, it doesn't matter as much what those things are, because we know that we can go to our God to give us exactly what we need, because he's faithful to do that and so much more. We get ready to go out into the Mattawan community. We'll be connecting with people dealing with all kinds of things because they're searching for answers and hope and joy and peace in the midst of all the chaos. And we have those. So we have to be ready. So I'm going to end with the same question as last week as Joel comes up. How's your vision? That's the wrong slide. Yep. How's your vision? Do you have something that's in the way of seeing with a good eye? Because God doesn't want you just working on those obvious planks. He wants you to remove all of them. So that way you can love others the way he loves them. God is faithful and he is patient. He will be with you as you work on your own stuff. But you have to actually do the work. And if there anybody's in this room is like, I don't know how to start, come find me. And we can start figuring that out together. Come find Ashley or Rick or Joel, and we would be happy to help walk alongside you and help you start that process of working through your own stuff. It's a little bit of a different week, not going through scripture like we have. But this isn't too important for us to miss. We have to do this in order for us to be effective in the community. So again, how's your vision? Get ready to work through your stuff. Joel.